So I ask everybody to look at the proposed code of conduct that's been circulated.
Good Lord.
The proposed code of conduct. Oh, as it relates to discriminatory conduct. All right.
Okay, the only thing you can show is that I'm free.
Well, let me, I'm going to do this again. Thank you very much. Does anyone... Anyone else lacking?
What's that?
This, the report. Or the text.
Maybe.
I emailed last week to everybody the report that I'm going to give, so, but there are more copies here if you need them.
Can I give them to the audience?
Yes. But again, if you find it missing, you will see a message from me in your email that has both the report itself, the PowerPoint presentation, which I'm not very adept at, and also some excerpts from the Pew Charitable Trust reports on technology and media. I'd like to initially thank several people that have been really helpful in pulling this together. I think most of you know that in January of last year, the PENB voted to pursue digital distribution. And this is a plan which I put together for management to review concerning how to go, some ways to go about entering digital distribution. I want to begin by talking about Okay. We've talked a great deal about the digital divide. I think one of the things that we learned from Nicole's presentation yesterday was that in many ways the digital divide has already changed the world. In other words, digital technology is here. Listeners are already blogging, using websites, texting, and sharing content. The problem is we're not. One of the things that we've heard about in a lot of the presentations we've had in the past about technology in Pacifica suggests that our local stations or Pacifica basically have to acquire new technology skills so that we can stay, you know, on the wave of technology. The problem is that the world is using these technologies. We're not. So while we know that we're in now a four-year period of shrinking audiences and revenues, one of the concerns that we have to have is that in order to go after the scarcer audiences, we have to go where they are. And where they are now is on internet, is on digital platforms. This does not mean that radio is dead, okay? It doesn't mean that radio is dead at all, but it probably is redefining itself and will keep doing that until it's indistinguishable with what we've seen in the past. So one of the issues is that we're already divided from our listeners now. If I want to listen to Davey D or if I want to listen to Margaret Prescott, I have to go to that internet station and I have to pick up the stream when it's aired. Currently, listeners do not have the capacity to pick from menus and listen to Pacifica program content in much the same way that we can go to the audio port if we're producing a show at our local station and pull down some quotes or get some actuality or hear what someone else has done. So these are some of the things that we're talking about. The other thing is that many people in the progressive world are doing some of the things that we could be doing, but they're further ahead. So, for example, WFMU 91.1 in Jersey City, New Jersey, not only has been internet streaming for over 10 years, they've been collecting pod-safe music for at least 6 or 7 years. So there are people out there that are willing to work with us. I was very thrilled to hear Nicole mention a blog, The Daily Coast, which I'm a big fan of. It's another area where a progressive community has been created, and many of the things that we're not hearing on our stations, we could see at Daily Coast. So there are synergies that should be created here, and we have some major resource partners in that area that I'll talk about. But the other thing we have to be very concerned about is that one of the realities that the internet faces us with is that we're no longer the only creator of progressive content. So not only are our stations limited to broadcasting within their FM signal area in their city, we're now in competition with people that are creating content online all over the world. So the point of this plan and the point of the board's motion a year ago is to respond to internet and technology's impact on radio, to begin growing audience again, and to help us collaborate a little bit more on developing the reputation that we have for uncompromising content. The things that I'm going to talk about is the technological landscape. I'm going to spend very little time on that because Nicole covered most of that, so there's no point in me rehashing all of those things for you. I would suggest that if you look at the excerpts from the Pew findings, you'll see a lot of very interesting things. For example, the people that are online now is like 110 million Americans. And one of the things that we learn is that what we thought was the digital divide may not be the case. For example, one of the findings that I was fascinated with is to learn that the people that are more likely to use their cell phones for non-voice applications are African Americans and Latinos. And let me tell you how this came home to me. About a month ago, we had a leak in our roof, and we called the roofer to come over. He's a Latino from El Salvador, and his way of getting the contract together for us was to go up on the roof and to go in the front, take pictures with his cell phone, come back, use the computer, take the pictures together, and put together an estimate, said, thank you very much, let me know when I can come back. And I was just overwhelmed, because if I had gone to, you know, a normal, you know, U.S. contractor, it would have been a seven-day turnaround and stuff like that, and we'd be on the phone a great deal. So one of the things that when I talk about how not to fall in the cracks of the digital divide, many of the assumptions we make are just wrong now. So we hope that by getting into this world, getting Pacifica in collaboratively, where all the stations are pulling resources together, we're going to be able to catch up as opposed to waiting for it to pass us further by. These are some of the things when I say radio is being redefined. FM radio is local. The internet is international. Local radio has got a very proprietary model. I think it's a big problem that I can't listen to programs that are produced at other Pacifica stations pretty much in an on-demand way. The other thing that everybody knows here is that satellite and podcasts allow listeners to act as their own PDs or RSS feeds. And, of course, all of these media have converged. TV and radio are now indistinguishable, pretty much. On a cell phone, you can now get radio, television, almost anything you can imagine. As a matter of fact, we had Lonnie was in town about a month ago when one of the elections was going on, and we're all Obama fans, and we were in a Shishi D.C. restaurant waiting for the election returns. It was about 11 o'clock at night, and all of the wait staff had gathered back by the table to watch Lonnie's cell phone with the television screen broadcasting. And because it was such an expensive restaurant, most of the patrons there were obviously conservative Republicans. So we came very close to getting thrown out of the restaurant. In any case. So those are just some of the issues. I think a big thing is that in many cases, we've lost control of programming for young audiences. After 2010, the figures that I've seen from Nathan, the Arbitron figures, suggest that some of our stations may have as much as 70% of the audience that are age 50 and over. And unless we begin doing something to get younger people coming in, programming and developing cadres of other young people listening to our stations, we're not going to be able to replace those listeners. Okay, so internally and externally, let's talk about some of the good things about the internal environment of Pacifica Broadcasting. I think we have the paradigm mission for public media. I think we have a great business model. We have 5 stations and 1 million listeners. That's a wonderful base to build on. We have a lot of very, very talented unpaid staff, as well as some paid staff. But if you look at our stations, 90%, 99% of the people that are hosting shows and producing them are volunteers. So we have a great workforce, albeit it's largely volunteer. The Pacifica Radio Archives are just a resource that are beyond belief. there are some problems because of their accessibility. We have our supporters, the members, the major donors. We have our 130-plus, it may now be 140-plus affiliate stations, free speech, radio, news, and, of course, Democracy Now!, which is the Pacifica brand that's top of mind. On the other hand, we have the erosion in audience. One of the things that many of our stations are seeing is an eroding ability to produce news, documentaries, and special programs. So we don't have a counterpart currently to Democracy Now!, which in the past accounted for as much as one out of every four of our dollars. And had Democracy Now! Not been in place 10 years ago, I would think that our financial situation and our audience situation would be incredibly grim at this point. There are a lot of carriage issues that we have at the local station. What PRA's archives is something that we have to be very concerned about. So those are some of the key issues we have to figure in. In the broadcast environment, you know, we're competing internationally. We've got this portability issue with convergence devices. We're competing with television. We're competing with social sites and blogs. Listeners are now using media to create other media and share it. Now, at first, that may sound like, okay, so the reality is that's very good for us, because if we can get our product in the hands of people that want to share it and pass it on to other people, they're basically acting as small redistributors, as small local stations on their own. There are also some wonderful innovative licensing technologies we'll talk about, and I think the reason licensing is important in this discussion is because the way the corporate world in this country is going to control internet media is by using licensing as a way of clamping down on what people have access to. So in the broadcast world, FM is struggling. There's media consolidation, which means that a lot of the interesting programming has been stripped off the air as Clear Channel and Infinity have taken over and basically Velveetized all of the stations. There are the copyright wars which are going on. One of the major concerns right now in radio is the concern that what will happen is that commercial broadcasters, ABC, Disney, people like that, will buy up all of the big internet radio stations, so they'll be the only players on the block. So these are some of the concerns that we have in that area. Let's just remember our business model, because I think anything that we do in the internet has to hark back to the way we operate. If we're in a market with 4 million listeners, our station there is going to reach a portion of that. And of that portion, maybe 1 in 10 are going to be members, and those members make up the budget. So our major concern as a radio network now is, how do we increase the percentage of potential listeners that are there? If we did more opinion research of listeners in our signal areas, I think we would find that the people that would be inclined or would have a profile to listen to Pacifica might be 5, 6, 7 times the actual audiences that we have now. So the question is, how do we get people to listen that just don't know that we're there? The other issue is, how do we increase the percentage of non-members to convert to members to increase our revenue? So that's our overarching financial and mission-based challenge. So if you look at some of these things and put them together, this is what I posit is kind of the linchpins of a strategic plan. One is that our strength is we have program content that's got the capacity to reach broad-based audiences, very large audiences. Maybe not in every single signal area altogether, but if you put everything that we have together, plus FSRN, plus Democracy Now!, plus the affiliates, we have tremendous programming capacity. The weakness, and this is something we've been talking about all weekend, is our difficulty in focusing network-wide resources collaboratively to create sustainability. And I think this is one of the things that's going to be a real challenge in the election. Can we really get people together to cover the campaign, and are people actually going to carry it? Because if they can't, we're going to be, we're going to be divided internally even more than we are now. The great opportunity is that the media consolidation and the increasing involvement of listeners in technology production and their access to technology means that there's an even greater appetite for civic media. People want to share information. They want people to share information with them. And almost everybody that says that they have a cell phone says that they wish that they knew how to take pictures or do videos or post things with it or get TV shows on it. So believe me, people want to use the technology. The threat of it is that there's kind of a window of opportunity which is closing. As more and more content providers come online, it's going to be harder for us to compete. To the extent that we don't make strategic alliances with other people that are in the progressive media area, other folks will. And it's going to become more expensive. In some ways, the technology is cheaper to purchase, but we're a network, and we have to translate this into all of our stations and get everyone up to speed. So it's getting more competitive. One of the things that we're talking about, basically, is then distributing content to exponentially larger audiences with digital platforms. This means bundling programming and streaming it. One of the things that KUHF here in Houston does is they have one channel that's English and one channel that's Spanish.
They actually have three other channels.
Right. So I'm not going to start the discussion, even though I chair the program committee. I'm not going to start the discussion about the difficulty we have with programs that have been on the air too long and aren't growing audience. But once we've broken through the 168 hours with internet channels that can be streamed nationally and internationally as well as locally, we've really done something. We can really let some new people come in and try their shows out. And again, using some of the licensing technologies, we make it very easy for that programming to be redistributed in accordance with the wishes of the content creators or copyright owners. And those are the rights issues. If it's content that we have that's produced by Pacifica paid staff, it's very clear we can own it, we can distribute it, it's ours, it's our choice. On the other hand, we have not had a clear policy here where we ask programmers to sign agreements that indicate not only are they going to abide by FCC regulations and other things, but that they agree that Pacifica can take their content and redistribute it. Now, I have to say, we have a number of unpaid staff that produce and distribute and redistribute their own content aggressively, and they're doing us a great service, but it's a small percentage of the total. So one of the things that we've done in the past year is we've developed an agreement that our unpaid staff can sign that will give us the permission to do that. Now, this is a policy issue. If we decide, as Dan has told us, that we own it and that's it, then we can go ahead and do that. But we haven't put this in writing in the past, and I think our concern is if we do something without making our producers and hosts aware of this and then go start trying to distribute their stuff, we're going to have even more conflict than we have now, as if we didn't have enough. One of the things in the music area, because of the copyright royalty board determinations that have been made, is that if we begin putting program content, if you have a public affairs show and you've got bumper music and stuff like that, if you put it on the internet, until there's some agreement that's reached with Sound Exchange, we will be responsible for reimbursing Sound Exchange every time, you know, that copyrighted content, that musical content, is played. So pod-safe music is a key thing here, although people think it's kind of corny. It's very important. Now, we can get that two ways. One is we can record an artist that comes to L.A. or Houston is a great place for music, get their permission to first record it and air it on Pacifica and then redistribute it according to a Creative Commons license. The other thing people can do is they can give us music. Now, I know that there's Teresa and other people here work at a coffee house that David Robicks and a number of other progressive artists frequently appear at. I think a number of progressive artists would give Pacifica content and let us use it. The difficulty there is we have to authenticate that whatever they give us is something that they really have. So this is an area of complication. But we actually have some resource partners like the Future of Music Coalition that would like to partner with Pacifica and others and develop a software-based system for researching and authenticating copyright information that artists would have other uses for. Finally, content that other people own If we want to put it up on the internet, we may have to pay to license it altogether. So those are some of the rights issues that really are going to be an increasing concern on the internet until the copyright wars are over. And for everybody, I know we've heard repeatedly that NPR and CPB are about to sign a deal with Sound Exchange. Maybe they are, but there's also new legislation in Congress from Senator Leahy that would require non-commercials to pay a royalty fee the same way commercial stations are now. And the hearings and the court hearings about the CRB ruling have been dragging out for quite a while. So I'm not really sure that that's going to change anytime soon. I haven't had a chance to research.
I think Leahy is about broadcast rather than online. I think Leahy's is about broadcast royalty.
Yeah, he's basically
terrestrial
saying,
broadcast royalty, like they have in Europe.
Right, but I'm saying that continues the copyright discussion. It doesn't make it go away.
Yeah, in a crazy way.
Yep, that's my point. Okay, I'm going the wrong direction. Okay, the benefits, again, very quickly, worldwide reach, new audiences, new demographics. Obviously, with things like social sites and blogs, we're going to pick up demographic groups that we're not reaching now. Streaming content on the internet is a way of trying out programs to see how they resonate with other regional, national, and international audiences. Creates more space. What more can I say? Creative Commons, I'm not going to go through this a lot. It is kind of the technology of choice for people, whether they're filmmakers or artists, like Jonathan Lethem, one of my favorite artists. Jonathan Lethem has distributed a lot of his work with Creative Commons. It's available in 20 languages. It's happening all over the world. It's very well structured. Most of the work that you would want to be distributed can be distributed via six different types of licenses. And if you want to look in more detail, the reports that you have will discuss what the terms of the licenses are, what conditions the owners can require the users to comply with, and some of the characteristics of this licensing. Okay. We have a lot of other rights administration issues in Pacifica, basically because we have to come up with some best practices around what we do when we have news programs with quotes or culture and arts programs where people are reading from their work or reading from someone else's work. The Pacifica Radio Archives have any number of copyright issues, including old folios, old photographs. But we've had a commitment from people like Creative Commons to work with us in sorting out some of these issues and working with the local station staff to come up with best practices. So that's a possibility. Now, I'm going to talk now about the projects that I've proposed that we explore within the network to help us move into this area. And there are kind of two criteria that I've used for this. One is I'd like us, in going into digital distribution, to consider projects that are going to help solve problems that we've got in the network already. And I'd also like to try to see if we can get the resource people from the different parts of Pacifica to work together on solving some of these problems. So the first one that we want to deal with is making sure that everyone that wants their programming to be distributed widely has agreed to let us distribute that they've read a document and made an agreement whether they use the one that we've drafted with the input and comments of Dan Siegel and John Krigler. So that's the first project. The second project is to create PodSafe music libraries. Basically, the idea here would be to create some architecture very similar to the audio port in which music that's been recorded at a local station or a concert that's been recorded. One of the things I talked to Lori Taguma about several months ago, in Native American areas and the reservations, there are often big concerts that are performed that the entire community is involved in, And these are things that, the Native American stations, of which there are now about 72 in the U.S., would like to be able to share. And I think our listeners would like that. So one of the things that we can do is not simply record artists, but to record concerts where the artist will consider to let us do that and agree to have it distributed by a Creative Commons license. And those licenses would basically limit the ability of that programming to be redistributed for commercial purpose. And it would have to be attributed back to the artist. That's another project. The third thing is, it seems to me that as soon as possible, we would like to be able to take program content from different parts of the network and make it available on webcasts. And I think what you want to do is we want to index the stuff, much like we do on AudioPort now, so that listeners can simply go in and pull down chunks of content that they want to listen to, or affiliates or other non-commercial stations can take it and use that a part of their broadcast. And indexing and metadata and tagging that content is going to be one of the preparatory challenges that we have administratively to moving in this area. But I really think that, once we can begin streaming content, for example, the problem that we had with the Winter Soldier hearing will be a lot easier. If that's up there and on the internet, we don't have to worry about people missing it. And secondly, the internet makes it much easier for us to track the behavior of listeners. So we can begin looking at what programs do well and when they do well, and then we can go back to the local stations and say, we're attracting audiences like this with the programming. You should benefit from that as well. The third thing is building an infrastructure to support the platforms for digital distribution. We have a rough, we actually have a budget for most of the hardware for what it's going to take so that we can stream content. However, one of the things that Otis has agreed, well, one of the things we need to do is work with people like Otis that can develop the software and other IT developers so that we have all of the architecture connected so that, for example, if we're going to do a stream, rather than asking somebody at a local station to upload it, a computer can simply pick that content up when it airs and pull it into a stream that it can then air on the internet at a specific time. And we've actually talked about how to solve some of those problems. We don't have a complete idea of how long it's going to take, but we're in the process of putting that together.
2 weeks.
Ah, there you have it. another key project, and I think this is in some ways one of the most exciting ones, is taking a project that's capable of not simply attracting external funding, but that also is going to get some media excitement. And I think the project that would really be great would be to publicize an effort to completely digitize and make searchable the Pacifica Radio archives. Now, one of the organizations that's agreed to be a resource partner to us, which is currently hosting the 68 Revolutionary Rewind, is the Internet Archive, or archive.org, which is the brainchild of Brewster Kahle, who was one of the search engine developers that got wealthy creating search engines for Amazon.com and others. But they've given, they've basically said they would be willing to talk with PRA at digitizing their archives at a much lower cost than we've heard from other vendors. Now, it's not ready to happen right now, A, because we don't have all the dough that it takes, but B, because there are a number of curatorial things that have to take place before you can do that. But at least we have people. The Internet Archive is basically trying to archive the content of all human knowledge in the languages of six cultures. So they've done a lot of this. They're scanning 500 or more books every single day as part of this project. So we have some partners that know a little bit about doing this. But I think, for example, to take the content that we have at Pacifica Radio Archives around, for example, the civil rights movement, and basically go to the media and say, here, this is what's in the Pacifica Archives, and we're working with one of the leading-edge technology archives in the world to bring this content and make it available to the public, I think that's a way of bringing back the Pacifica brand from the age and when Pacifica was really on the cutting edge and we were setting the trends and we broke the story about the Vietnam War, as opposed to the situation that we're in now where we're competing with so many other forms of media and we're not as well known as we were previously and there's more competition. So I think that's a very exciting project, and we have discussed this with Brian and Addie Gevins. And it's going to be a while, but I think it's a great possibility. Inaugurating webcast. Did I go backwards? I think I did. Oh, one of the things Nicole talked about, someone said we have to bring youth into our stations and educate them, and she said no, the youth have to come in and educate us. Here's what I think, I mean, I understand what she means, but here's what I think the reality is. At every station that we've got, you could create a blog or a podcast or a social site at every single high school. And the kids have got already, they've got the digital skills, they may even have the editing skills, but they don't have access to a broadcaster that's willing to do this. Now, we're not at the point, you know, in Pacifica, where we know how to put together podcasts and blogs and social sites. And also, we don't understand the dynamics of the people that use that. So this is the sort of thing that we should begin doing. And it's an area where our local stations can come up to speed relatively quickly once we have the basic infrastructure in place. So that's one of the next to the last projects. Articulating a powerful vision for media democracy. We have some great technology shows in Pacifica. We've got Off the Hook and the PC Show at WBAI. Technology Bites here at KPFT is a great show. It's funny. It's like car talk for people that are into computers. And there's a show which is catching up to it in LA very fast, Digital Village. One of the ways we could announce Pacifica's entry into a broad media commonwealth along digital platforms would be to announce a series of programs in which we could get some of the visionaries, whether it's Esther Dyson or Robert McChesney from Free Press or Larry Lessig, who created Creative Commons, or Brewster Kahle from the archive.org, Jeff Chester from the Center for Digital Democracy, to talk about media and democracy on the internet. As we said, what we're seeing is actual communities are being created. Young people are using the internet. It's a part of their behavior. And by putting programs on Pacifica in which some of the visionaries can describe how the landscape is shaping and shifting, I think we could create a lot of excitement and awareness among our listeners and people that aren't listening now, and it would help brand Pacifica as a media organization that is on the leading edge for media democracy, which is not quite how we're seeing right now. The other thing that I think we need to do in this context is establish relationships with funders, because we don't have disposable discretionary income right now. And I'm thinking that at least one of the areas is getting grantors to consider funding projects such as the Pacifica Radio Archives or developing programming that we broadcast on the internet. Now, I'm not suggesting that Brian is not looking after grants. He is. He's got new ones. He's doing a wonderful job. But we don't do a good job of that anymore at Pacifica in terms of developing programming that can air on all of our stations. And one of the difficulties, if you go to a funder and convince them that Pacifica can produce a documentary about, for example, immigration, we've got a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful journalist named David Bacon at KPFA, who is absolutely the authority on immigration and many labor issues. If you said, we've got the show of shows on immigration, and we go and talk to George Soros' Open Society Institute, And then they say, well, how many people are going to say it? And we say, well, we're going to air it at KPFA. And maybe some stations in L.A. or New York will pick it up. They're not going to be interested. So one of the things we have to do to attract money to create these projects is we have to find impetuses for all of the stations to collaborate and to take a look at airing them, not as must carry, but got to carry.
Please carry.
I got.
Really should.
Really should. The other thing that we don't do, and this gets back to one of the reasons why we're not, growing and why we're shrinking, is because on the one hand, we don't do a lot of research of what our listeners' interaction and behavior with our programming is. We know what the Arbitron numbers say, but we don't know much else. We don't do research. We don't have on our websites a space at every single program where a listener can tell us what they think, and in exchange for telling us what they think, they got to give us their name, address, and you know, email address so that we can track them. We don't do that now. So we don't measure the cause and effect relationships of our programming, the listening, giving. You know, we do pledge drives 3 times a year, but we don't keep statistics about who gives, how much they give, why they give, how often they give, how long they've been members. We haven't ever kept that information. And this is part of the data that will help us know not just maybe we should do it, but what the actual cause and effect relationships are so that we can, for example, if we do an advertising campaign to reach more listeners, we must understand what media to advertise it in, whether it's over our own airwaves or on bus backs or in a folio like they produce here at KPFT. So those are the sorts of things that the internet will enable us to do. There are a lot of benefits to local stations. We're not talking about doing something that minimizes the role of local stations, because it's the content that comes from those local stations that's going to make this successful. So the local programs would receive world exposure if they were being aired on the internet. Any revenues that Pacifica gets, remember, our model is if we've got a media market of 4 million people and 150,000 that listen to us, you know, 15,000 of whom are members, we're talking about online revenues that would reach a worldwide audience. Obviously, those revenues would have to be shared with the content creators, which are the local stations. The other thing that you can do with this listening is we can redirect listeners that pick particular programs and say, if you like Technology Bites is at, you know, KPFT in Houston, and it's on such and such a time, or here you can pull it off the internet this way. The other thing, as I mentioned before, is that I think moving in this direction will help us explore podcasts, social sites, and doing some of the things that we haven't mastered at this point. Finally, again, this is, I think, the best way to create space without the maximum pain at the local station level, although I'm happy to say that KPFT, you know, now has a plan to begin program evaluation, and it's very well thought through. And the thing they did is a lead into that is they got producer agreements signed. And I would say I was told that about 87% of the staff actually signed them. That's according to Ernesto. So some of our stations are putting the things in place. There's some other implementation issues. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about it. In order to put stuff up on the internet, we will have to trim it a little bit, but a certain amount of that can be done digitally. The big problem for us is we have to learn how to promote the shows that we're putting out there, whether it's locally or online, better than we do now. And I think we also need to explore, but should explore, the dynamics of online fundraising. So that's pretty much it. I will stop there.
Rob, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Does anybody have any questions? Because this may surprise you, but we have a few more items to get through here. Nobody leaves the room. Lock the doors. Afia had a question and then Otis.
I just
wanted to get, and you can give it to me later, Rob, is the reference for the in the Pew study that refers to African Americans and Latinos using their cell phones for non-voice, that the reference that you have.
I didn't write it on that document. In the document that I sent to you, it's under Pew Charitable Trust. It's www.pewtrust or something like it. I can look it up in a minute. But the email that I sent to you has the URL for that.
Uh-huh, okay.
And there's lots of the studies, and there's a lot of that's. I tried to do some excerpts.
My concern is that... whilst without knowing what the methodology is, presumptions are made about various communities, African American communities, which is my primary concern. And I know that oftentimes data that may show up in the African American community in the Northeast is not consistent with the reality of the African American community in the South. So I would caution any notions about planning on any community, purely based on a study, but especially communities of color. Yeah.
Thank you.
The only other thing I can tell you is that another finding that I've read in a number of publications indicates that young African American males are the most likely subjects to have MP3 players. So I can't tell you the answer to the methodology and where they did the research. I think that there are other findings that you'll see that suggests that that's in fact the case. And the point I was making is that the digital, when we talk about the digital divide sometimes, we don't really have, as you say, an accurate sense of what the behaviors are demographically.
Okay. Otis was next. Otis, did you have a comment?
I wanted to toot KPFT's horn a little bit, because we've been doing the archive for 5 years now, something like that. And what we found, you know, this is basically archives of all of the shows. And what we found is it really works. And the way we know that is when it goes down, he gets a whole bunch of phone calls saying, where's the archive? People are time shifting. It's for time shifting, because now people can listen to shows anytime they want to. And in addition to that, as a result of the NFCB, I've now modified it so that we can play files which are inaccessible, so people can't download them. So we don't do. Just 1 second. I got you. So that we can play them and avoid that copyright problem. That we're going to talk to Ken Friedman about that one. The other thing is, and what we did at KPFT was get our own server. So we actually have a server that's a separate server. We can take that server and, Dwayne, I guess, we can offer the kids blog space if we want to. We can use that server for all kinds of things, and it ends up costing what amounts to $100, $150 a month. Get a huge presence on the Internet for very little money by doing it this way, and some of the other stations are doing it too. The archive, by the way, is running on a bunch of different affiliates. We're going to be putting this thing in K-Mud. Okay, I'm sorry, Lisa.
I'm sorry.
Lisa actually, had her. She had something.
Really, there were other people who had their chance. Otis,
okay.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
I want to remind people again, it is 3:10. The first bands are leaving at 3:30 for the Intercontinental Airport, and the remaining vans, and there are 15 people going at that time, and the remaining people go to Hobby Airport at 4 o'clock. Grace?
I'll be as quick as possible. Thank you, Rob. I have some interesting ideas that parallel yours that I'll send to you. One, for instance, is we should make little Internet buttons, logos. Say, listen to progressive radio or free speech radio with the logo that can be put on other popular websites so they can just click on those buttons. Right. And people can say, can you please carry our little ad for free on your big fat website?
Yeah, and that's another example of how we're divided against ourselves now, not intentionally, but that's what Nicole was talking about yesterday with PRA trying to get a button on the website. Anything? Lisa.
Lisa's the last one.
I'm sorry.
another item.
A real brief comment. When I was doing a little bit of research pertaining to the shows that WBAI archives, which is separate from the Pacifica Radio archives, and although there was controversy about these numbers, but they were very fascinating because they were showing on average about 500,000 requests a month for shows that had been, you know, from the archive. And I thought that was kind of very interesting, especially since, in my opinion, it's not really advertised that much. But since, by looking at this again, I've noticed, and I don't have an iPod yet, but a lot of these are not just, like, people just listening to the shows online listening, but requests, what RSS feeds, going to the iPods and shows that they had put in that they wanted to receive this information. So a lot of that showed that activity from what I could judge. So I thought that was really...
Okay.
I just want to thank John O'Mella for all of his help in the past. I want to thank KPFT, Dwayne, Otis, and others for the continuing work that they've done. I hope they get to our station to train us about doing folios and KPFTX and assessment and evaluation.
Thank you.
And thank you for Dan Siegel and Nicole for letting me present this to the staff. That's it.
Thank you, Rob, very much. Okay, folks.